We'll talk for a few moments with Greg Hilburn, who's with us on site at the Farm Bureau Convention. Right now, it's 2 years from the next major election, and people are already ramping up about the governor's race for 2019. What do you think, what do you hear from your perch in Monroe about 2 years from now?
Well, as things ramp up toward that, I'm reminded of 2 years ago when you conducted the forum with the gubernatorial candidates then that literally set the tone for that whole race. If you recall, Senator Vitter wasn't too happy with you nor Ronnie Anderson that night. But anyway, I remember that. I think me and Clancy DeBose might have been the only ones that covered that. But it was fascinating. So this event always sets the tone for politics. It's a must attend if you're a politician. I wrote a story last year about the clout that this group carries, the political clout. So I'm always glad to be here. I'm here every year covering this event.
Yeah, when you have 150,000 members or close to it, we're talking about a good portion of the state. And people forget that farming remains the biggest industry in the state with 27,000 farmers. So it's a huge part of the fabric of our state.
As far as 2019, I did do a story during the session about folks who might be interested in running. Of course, the governor his approval ratings are fairly strong, but he is a Democrat, and that makes him vulnerable in this deeply red state.
To say the least, the only Democrat standing in statewide office, and I don't think there'll be a shortage of candidates. I guess the question is whether the Republicans will coalesce behind a candidate, or will there be numerous candidates, as we saw in 2015.
I'm not sure, but the most interesting scenario now, of which no one in either camp will confirm, but there's a theory out there that Senator Kennedy will make that run, and then possibly, if he wins, appoint Jeff Landry to the Senate seat. So that's one interesting scenario that could come about.
That scenario's been buzzing for a while now, and it could happen. And if it happened, that would mean if Senator Kennedy were to become Governor Kennedy, we would have two U.S. Senate races in our state in 2020 at the same time.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something?
A lot of money. I see Commissioner Strain over there smiling. He's got re-election himself.
Yeah, well, he says he's running for the office he has. But hold tight, Greg. I think we've got Stephanie Grace back in the fold. Stephanie's starting a well-earned vacation on Martha's Vineyard. And can you hear us in Massachusetts, Stephanie?
I can. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. You sound great. So let's start with the story that's it is the number one story in the country today, above the fold in the New York Times, above health care and everything else in the world. It's Donald Trump's latest tweets. The headline in the New York Times: Trump's taunts aimed at TV host. He had some harsh words for Mika Brzezinski, saying low IQ, crazy Mika, and then saying that she had been bleeding badly from a facelift. What do you think? Is this something that'll just go away, or is this going to be something that will haunt the president for a while?
Well, I have said many times that I thought this is the one that would haunt the president. That was back during the campaign, so I'm not sure I'm the best judge of this. But one thing I find so fascinating about this is, you know, this is part of a pattern of really going after women and their appearances, and even not the first time he's talked about somebody bleeding. I mean, it's weird stuff. But the fact that he did it on a day when he's looking at this health care bill and he's looking at three female senators, and he can only lose two Republican votes, and there are three women, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Shelley Moore Capito, who could kill this thing. And, you know, at least two of them have reacted very negatively to this, and it's just not what you do if you're trying to build a team and get people to stand with you on a controversial issue. And, you know, it's just weird. And you know, on the other hand, the Republicans have gotten some of what they want out of his presidency. They got the Supreme Court justice. You know, they're still looking at tax reform. they need him. So, you know, it's just such an interesting dance how the relationship is playing out. You know, he's clashed with Mitch McConnell over going after Dean Heller, one of the Republican senators who's against the health care bill. His PAC started running attack ads against a vulnerable senator, like, you know, which is going to make him even more vulnerable. Mitch McConnell called that beyond stupid and got them to pull back. But, you know, I mean, we just have this kind of novice let loose at the very top of the political system, and it's havoc. It's so interesting.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to comment on the president's latest tweets or anything else with Stephanie Grace. Stephanie is a longtime columnist and now writing as only she can with the Baton Rouge and New Orleans Advocate. We're also here at the Farm Bureau Convention with Greg Hilburn of the Monroe News Star. 877-217-5757. You mentioned how this latest assault from the president could have an impact on his ability to gain the votes he needs for his health care reform plan. The two U.S. senators from Louisiana, Bill Cassidy and John Kennedy, will vote on that at some point. And at this point, it's considered to be a given that Senator Kennedy will vote for whatever comes out of the Republican ranks. What about Senator Cassidy? Is it a done deal, or is there a chance that he could defect from his party?
You know, if you had asked me this a week ago, I would have said it's a done deal. He seemed to be, despite being very public about his doubts about having kind of an alternate approach to how to handle this, you know, he's talked a lot about expanding coverage. He put together his own bill with Susan Collins, who's basically considered the most moderate of all Republican senators. And he did the, you know, he went on Jimmy Kimmel and said, you know, we're going to take care of people with pre-existing conditions and not have lifetime limits. So, you know, he almost kind of cornered himself with his own words, which I think are sincere. I mean, we know his background. We know he was a charity hospital doc. He's dealt a lot with, you know, the patient population that's specifically affected by Medicaid cuts. But on the other hand, he ran as an Obamacare opponent, and he is, you know, has always been kind of in the mainstream of the Republican caucus. So, you know, he seemed to be kind of talking himself into a yes vote. And then that CBO report came out, and, you know, I think maybe that pushed him a little back. You know, that's the Congressional Budget Office report that said that the current plan would leave 22 million people uninsured. And, you know, he's someone who looked at when the CBO said the House plan would leave 23 million, a lot of Republican senators kind of didn't speak out about that. He did. He said that's a real problem. That causes me great concern. And, you know, there's also, I think, some safety in numbers going on. The fact that there are quite a few at this point, including other unexpected, you know, critics within the Republican Party. You know, there's a guy from Kansas who knew he was a skeptic, that, you know, there might be kind of enough senators saying, hey, wait a minute, we don't need to rush. Bill Cassidy has said specifically, why are we rushing? Let's get this right. But also, I don't think anybody wants to be the one vote, you know, that it loses by, because that's really politically perilous within the caucus. But, you know, if it looks like they don't have the votes, I think we probably are going to see more people willing to say no. And I would put him in that camp. And again, but he's just emerged as such an interesting figure. He's the governor's office, Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards, considers him an ally in this in a lot of ways. There are some real concerns in this bill over how specifically Louisiana would be hurt in the kind of Medicaid cuts. And that has to do with the reimbursement formula and the fact that Louisiana started Medicaid expansion so late because Governor Jindal did not support it, and then, you know, Governor Edwards did when he came in last year. And, you know, the funding formula relies on having a longer track record of Medicaid expansion, and Louisiana would really be penalized because it, you know, the quarters that would count in the formula would be the quarters that were just when it was just starting, so we didn't have high enrollment yet. And Bill Cassidy is actually in there working on that, and, you know, you hear a lot about whether McConnell will make side deals with different people to get their votes. This is one of the things that you know, could get his vote, I think. You know, he went on Face the Nation last week and said, you know, we have some state-specific issues, and if we can take care of those, I'm probably a yes. And this is one of them.
Greg, I wanted to get your take before we hear from Stephanie about the politics of the health care vote. Here you've got Senator Cassidy, who apparently is on the fence. He's a Republican. Would he be amenable to risking a vote against the president? After all, this is a president who carried Louisiana by 400,000 votes last year.
I don't think in the end, even though I believe that he would like to vote against it, in the end, I don't think he can. I think he'll have to, you know, line up with the Republicans in this, for coming from this state at least.
Stephanie, Senator Cassidy is a former Democrat who actually was a big force in the Kathleen Blanco campaign against Bobby Jindal back in 2003. Then he was a Democrat. He apparently is torn on this issue. I don't think there's any question, but as Greg said, the politics are such that it would be a very difficult vote for him to vote against the President of the United States, who is the leader of the world and the leader of his party.
Well, it's interesting. I think that's probably right, although I'm not 100% sure. You know, I think if I could get inside his head, I would say that he probably would love this never to come to a vote, I'm just guessing, so that he doesn't have to do that, because I think Greg's right about where his heart is on this. But, you know, I have to say, if we have this open primary system, so the idea that he runs again, you know, I've been to some of his town hall meetings. I don't think he's hearing a huge groundswell of people saying vote for this in the state. I could be wrong, but you're really not seeing this around the country. And you are seeing this big groundswell of people saying vote against it. And we know that he doesn't need those voters. He can, you know, win with Republican voters. But is this a make or break issue for those Republican voters? I suspect not. And then in terms of the politics, you come to the open primary, you know, if it were just Bill Cassidy against a Democrat, he's probably perfectly safe. And if it's Bill Cassidy against maybe not a strong Democrat but a very conservative Republican, he's probably safe because he'd get the Democratic votes. The danger for him is the squeeze in the, you know, somebody coming, having a stronger Democrat and also a conservative Republican, and the person in the middle can get squeezed out in this open primary system we have. You know, I'm not sure who that strong Democrat would be at this point, but who knows?
We're vividly on display. The squeeze you're talking about happened to Buddy Romer in 1991,
exactly,
with David Duke on the right and Edwin Edwards on the left. 877-217-5757, and a listener picking up on what I said before we went to the break, saying, is it possible that Mitch Landrieu will run for President of the United States? Stephanie, is that beyond the realm of possibility?
It seems far-fetched, but then, you know, you look at the party and you say, okay, who? I think there is hunger for a new face. You know, the kind of best-known people in the party are really in that, you know, 70-ish age group where Donald Trump is, you know, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden. And I think there is a lot of interest in the next generation, and you see these lists of people who are generally not hugely well-known across the country, but interesting figures. And they're long lists, I have to say. And, you know, this is a guy, I know people in New Orleans and Louisiana have a lot of fatigue over this monument fight, but the fact is that it really has helped boost his reputation across the country and in Democratic circles. And when people are kind of looking for, you know, the profile of someone who might be an interesting figure, a Southern white male, frankly, who took this position and kind of went out on a limb on it, is going to be appealing to people. And his speech it went crazy viral. I mean, you know, people out there in the country, newspaper columnists, I see people, just people I know on Facebook from other parts of the country who read it and were very affected by it. I think it, you know, had a much bigger impression out there in the world than it did at home, because I think people were ready for the issue to be over back here. You know, he just assumed this week a higher political profile position. He became president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, so he's going to be someone who will get a lot of media interviews and be kind of a lead figure in taking on progressive issues that affect cities. I think voting rights is going to be a very big one now. You know, that's kind of heating up. Sanctuary cities, immigration, healthcare, climate change, you know, the whole range of big issues in the Democratic Party. And he's a talented politician. you know, that said, it is a big leap, and there are a lot of other people in the mix. And I don't know. It seems kind of crazy, but, you know, Donald Trump. I mean, what's crazy and what's not these days?
Well, yeah, it's an unusual world we're in now, politically and otherwise. And Stephanie's column today in The Advocate reads, as Landrieu goes national, New Orleans prepares to move on. Now, Greg, it was almost 2 years ago to the date that Bobby Jindal announced his candidacy for president of the United States. He left the campaign with zero delegates and now is on one board that I'm aware of, but other than that, not employed in Washington or in Louisiana. It's a hard fall sometimes from high places in politics.
Well, as you know, Governor Jindal was wildly popular coming into office. He won re-election in a landslide, still very popular, but by the end his approval ratings had dipped to, you know, 25-30%. And so the tide does turn occasionally, and it could turn again in his favor. He's a young man. He's been on Twitter more. I noticed just this week, the last couple of weeks, he's been on Twitter more with more appropriate tweets than, I would say, than the president. But so, as I said, that wouldn't be hard to do, Steph, right?
Right.
He probably has a future. Somebody mentioned that he might make a good university president even. I don't know. And Mitch.
But a man who cut higher education by a big margin, though, right?
Hey, that's right. And then with Mayor Landrieu, I think Stephanie's right. He's elevated his profile over this monuments issue. Now, while he might, well, he is would unlikely be able to be elected to a statewide office in his own state, that doesn't necessarily mean that he couldn't, you know, gain some momentum. It would be unlikely, but who knows?
Well, and it used to be a given that when a native son ran for president that he or she would carry their home state. But we saw last year President Trump lost his home state of New York by a huge margin, the first president to win an election without carrying his home state since 1916. So Mayor Landrieu, if he were to run, I think he probably would have a difficult time carrying Louisiana, as any Democrat would. But Stephanie, is there a second act for Governor Jindal at the age of 46 in American or Louisiana politics?
Well, you know, I would say more likely American politics, kind of like Mitch Landrieu. And that's not an uncommon thing for, you know, this is one of the things I wrote today, a two-term governor, mayor, you know, a level of fatigue does set in. I think it set in extremely strongly with Bobby Jindal. One of the things that's so interesting in watching Louisiana politics since he left office is how he's still just not a factor. He's not anywhere. You don't see him. You don't hear from him. His fellow Republicans don't really want to be around, you know, associated with him, which is very different from, say, how they feel about David Vitter. Even though he lost the governor race, he's still, you know, kind of a presence, and his people that, you know, worked in his campaigns are out there active in other successful ventures and still very involved. So I don't know. I think out there, you know, he goes out there and he has the very impressive resume. He can be very impressive. You know, he has to kind of change the last word on him almost was this, you know, I don't think people take him very seriously right now because of how the presidential campaign went and how he behaved in some cases. But, you know, that can change. Bill Clinton was a joke after he gave that horrible speech back in, you know, in the 80s at the Democratic Convention, and he came back. It can happen with talented politicians. And, of course, Bobby Jindal is very talented. He never would have gotten to where he did at such an early age if he weren't. But, you know, it's been really remarkable to see him disappear from public life like this.
Well, and he is
and
talented.
And one more thing I'd add.
But
that
I don't,
you know,
think he's a Bill Clinton. Go ahead.
I don't think he is either. But the approval rating was so interesting because at one point when he was still in office, he and Sam Brownback, who was the governor of Kansas, had the lowest approval ratings of any governors in in the country. And again, both are Republicans and both were pursuing real austerity agendas in very, very Republican states. And
Stephanie,
I think
sorry. We're going to have to run, but it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And
thank
thanks
you
for joining us today on your vacation. Thanks to you, Greg. Thanks
thank
for
you
listening. And stay tuned.